Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz migurei aviv be'eretz kena'an eile toledot Yaakov Yosef ben shivasrei shana hoya roe esechav batzon v'hu nar Es b'nei Vilhav, yes b'nei Zilpa, Neshei Aviv, Vayavei Yosef, Estiba Samra, El Avihem, V'Yisrael, Ahav, Es Yosef, Mikol Banav, Ki Ven Zikunim Hu Lo, V'Asa Lo, Kitones Pasim. Yaakov settled in the land of his father's sojournings, in the land of Canaan. These are the chronicles of Yaakov. Yosef, at the age of 17, was a shepherd with his brothers by the flock, but he was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Yosef would bring evil reports about them to their father. Now Israel loved Yosef more than all his sons, since he was a child of his old age, and he made him a fine woolen tunic.
OU Israel presents...
In. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayeshev, which is Shabbat Mevorchim Chodesh Tevet, which is the Shabbat immediately before Chanukah, the first candle of which is Sunday night. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 21st day of the month of Kislev, 5776, corresponding to December 3rd. December 2nd, yesterday, was my father's birthday. Had he lived till now, he would have been 93. And my daughter's birthday, my first daughter, Miri, and I won't mention how old she is, but it brings to mind Jack Benny and a few other things. So I wish her a happy birthday, as I did in private. And that should do it. Now, the first three psukim, which I read of Vayeshev, say a lot. The English translation in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash, not to my liking, in some of the words, but we'll talk about that as well. But first, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod, ki imacha hasalicha lema'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim ebein bayam uvein bayabasha ha'makom yirachem aleihem V'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela la'ora u'mishibud l'ge'ula hashtar ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. Okay, a lot of things to do, not just Vayeshev, but getting ready for Hanukkah. Hopefully there'll be a show next week also for Hanukkah, on Hanukkah. But it's good to get some things done in advance. And we'll see what we do. And certainly the connection between Vayeshev and Hanukkah. So let's see where we start. The first thing is when I read the verses from the beginning of the Sedra, one, two, or three, whatever. I usually read it in Ashkenazis, which I'm more comfortable with. I made a mistake by Kutonet Pasim instead of saying Kesones Pasim, but I didn't bother redoing it. And as I said, the English I thought was lacking things because Kesones Pasim, Kutonet Pasim, is the multicolored coat, the striped coat, and not merely translating it as a fine linen tunic. The point is that it was an unusually costly and high-class garment, whatever it was, and it fanned the jealousy of the sons, the brothers of Yosef against Yosef. But we'll get there shortly. Okay, the overview of the beginning of the Parsha, the Sedra, is that Yaakov has finally returned after 20-plus years in the house of Laban, and he had left fleeing his brother's anger, single and alone. And he returns with a large family and many, many flocks and cattle and servants. And he plans to dwell in peace in his father's dwelling place, meaning the land of Canaan, the future Eretz Yisrael, the future land of Israel. However, it is not to be. The Torah continues, these are the chronicles of Yaakov, and not mentioning all 12 of his sons, it mentions only Yosef, who was 17 years old at the time we're talking, and he was a shepherd together with his brothers, and he was friendly to the brothers that came from Bilhah and Zilpah. And he used to report negative reports about the sons of Leah to their father, Yaakov. That's not a great way to start out. The Torah continues with his having a dream, and the brothers already hated him for the favoritism that Yaakov showed to him, and they hated him more because of, the dream. And a second dream, and it just gets worse and worse until they decide to do away with him. First they were thinking of killing him, then they threw him into a pit to decide what to do. Reuven had intention of coming back and saving him and returning him to his father. That wasn't to be because Yehuda engineered his being sold to a passing caravan and eventually from one to another until he ended up in Egypt. And many years later, we all followed him there. So it's not a good thing. But let's take a step backwards. We have recently read in Toledot and Vayetze and Vayishlach of troubles that Yaakov has from, let's call it, outside of the family. They are family members. Esav, remember, was his twin. But we think more historically of Esav being an enemy from outside the Jewish people, love on a different kind of enemy from outside the Jewish people, and finally, Yaakov returns to the land of Israel to settle down. But as I said before, it was not to be. And the not to be comes in a worse way than enemies from the outside. It comes from enmity within the family, within the Jewish people. We cannot avoid seeing the events of Yaakov the person and Yosef the person and the brothers the people as implications on a national level. Even the use of the term Yisrael for Yaakov is a hint towards the, the nation of Israel, the descendants of Yaakov, the descendants of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and it's very much in line with the famous Ma'asei Avot Siman Levanim. The deeds of our ancestors are the pattern setters for the deeds of the offspring, meaning the Jewish people. So if we look at it and avoid the technical differences between the generalization of the idea and the particulars, we have the story of Jewish history in that we have our enemies from out, be they Greek or Roman or Egyptian or Syrian or you name it. We've had plenty. We continue to have plenty. And then the tension and the friction and, as I said before, the enmity within the Jewish people, symbolized by the brothers' attitude towards Yosef, but manifesting itself today in a very wide range of distinctions. We could be talking about Ashkenazim and Sephardim. We could be talking about religious and non-religious. We could be talking about Zionist and non-Zionist or anti-Zionist. We could be talking about political left and political right. We could be talking about what are called the different streams of Judaism. We have even Hasidim and Mitnagdim, and worse, within Hasidim, friction from one sect to another, and still worse, friction within one sect. Half follow the former Rebbe's son, and the other half follow his son-in-law, or things like that. We are no strangers, sad to say, to the difficulty in pulling our act together, in the difficulty we have of trying in some way for tolerance and some form of mutual respect. I have my own limits on that. I'm not preaching it unfettered, but I don't know if we'll get there. But the fact of the matter is that Yosef felt justified in reporting certain things he saw in his brothers to their father, and the brothers felt justified in what they had done to Yosef because they felt unjustly accused before their father. And that's the story. Everyone thinks he's right. Everyone also thinks the other people are wrong, and they act upon it. And it is a very disconcerting thing because the Esav part was a non-starter. The love on part is over and done with. The Egyptian slavery is coming up, of course, and then there are various and sundry battles that the Torah describes as the Jews wandered through the wilderness and moving into Tanakh. We have plenty of those stories of fighting against enemies for different reasons. And yet, when you get to Vayeshev, it really, really sticks in your craw, whatever that means. because we're talking about brothers. And we're talking about brothers unlike Yaakov and Esav, where Esav went his own way. And when Rivka Imenu was pregnant with them, and Vatelech Lidroshet Hashem, she went to find out what was going on from God, and she got a prophetic message that she had Shnei Goyim Bivitnech Ushnei Leumim Mimeayech Yiparedu. There are two separate nations that are developing and going to develop from within your womb. So this is different because Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zevulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Yosef, Binyamin are not only 12 brothers of one father and four different mothers, but they are what makes up Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people. And even though there was a split of the kingdom and the lost 10 tribes and friction with Binyamin and problems here and problems there, they have never been spoken of as being separate from the Jewish people. So when you have that, it hurts even more. And as you read Vayeshev, you're talking about brothers who took their young brother, tossed him into a pit, sat down to eat and drink, then took advantage of a passing caravan to sell him as a slave, and begun with him. And it wasn't until much later in the coming Sedras, as we'll see unfolding there, that they are eventually reunited. But I don't know if that's the best term, because they're not really reunited. They still remain apart. And as much as part, it's a small part of Jewish history, includes a unified kingdom, there seems to always have been splits and infighting, and it continues till this very day. I must be sounding depressing to you because I'm sounding depressing to myself. And I really don't mean it to do that, but I think it can't be avoided. We have a prophecy, which is an ironclad promise from God, that there will be a genuine, total, complete unification and reconciliation of the brothers. How that will manifest itself in the forms of the other splits that I describe, I don't know. I will say this. I personally don't like the idea of homogenizing the Jewish people. I like the idea of difference of opinions and different versions of davening, provided that people don't look down their nose at others who don't do exactly the same as they do. And that's the rub. Now, I have to also be honest and make a distinction between those fractured parts of the Jewish people that are within the guidelines of Jewish law and those who are not. And I don't want to get into that now, but I am not, again, totally with rose-colored glasses. I have hopes, you know, when I speak of religious people as opposed to not secular and not non-religious and not even anti-religious, but religious, to me, the opposite is not yet religious. Zionists and not yet Zionists. But obviously, that's not an objective view. That is a very subjective view of mine, and I will leave it at just that comment. So we've got Parshat Vayeshev, which 28.5% of the years is a Shabbat Chanukah, 10% by itself, and the other 18%, it's one of the two Shabbat Chanukahs, Shabbatot Chanukah. And the other 71.5% of the time, it is the Shabbat right before Hanukkah. So it's unavoidable to refer to Vayeshev as the Hanukkah time Sedra. So is Miketz, these two Sedras. But you have to see that even though there is no official correlation between the cycle of the Torah reading and the calendar, proof of which is on various holidays, we suspend the weekly Torah reading and read a special portion when Rosh Hashanah is Shabbat, or when Yom Kippur is Shabbat, or when Sukkot is Shabbat, which it is at least once, and in Israel could be twice. Actually, outside of Israel, it could be twice also. And Pesach, which is only once in Israel, a Shabbat, and in Chutz Laaretz could be twice, which it will be this year, in Mir Tzashem, and Shavuot, but that can't come on Shabbat except in Chutz Laaretz. Point is that on any special occasion, there is a special Torah reading, and it's not the weekly portion. And even when we maintain the Torah portion, we add for the special day as well. Next Shabbat, Shabbat Chanukah, happens to also be Rosh Chodesh, and therefore there will be three Torahs that we will read from. The first one will be the weekly portion of Miketz, and the second one will be the special portion for Rosh Chodesh, and the third one will be a special portion for Chanukah. So that tells you already that there is no correlation between the weekly portions and the calendar, but you can't avoid making connections. And specifically here, we're talking about the fighting against the enemy from outside and the inner fighting, let's say Lahavdil, of Jew against Jew, because the Yevanim, the Greeks, were not the only enemies of the Hanukkah story. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tibbetz audio for Vayeshev and pre-Hanukkah. You are listening to Torah Tibbetz audio for Vayeshev and pre-Hanukkah, and I left you with a genuine cliffhanger. I said the Yevanim, the Greeks, were not the only enemy that was fought against in the Hanukkah story, but not that it had become a major part of the story. I believe purposely suppressed behind the scenes, and that is the fight against the Mityavnim. The Mityavnim were Hellenized Jews who objected to all of this Torah and mitzvot kind of stuff, because we're beyond that. We're modern now. We are Hellenists. And the just as an example, the Al Hanisim, which we say on Hanukkah, speaks about the miracles of God handing over Rabim Ba'ad Ma'atim, the multitude, meaning the large Greek army, in the hands of the small band of Chashmonaim, Rabim Ba'ad Ma'atim, Tameim Ba'ad Tahorim, the defiled, into the hands of the pure, Rishaim Ba'ad Tzadikim, wicked, in the hands of the righteous. And then it mentions the Zaydim biyad osakei Toratecha. The Zaydim are generally considered to be fellow Jews who have fallen away from a Torah way of life against those who are involved with the Torah. So when you first learn the Hanukkah story as a kid, it's the Greeks and Israel and the Maccabees and the Chashmonaim and the Hasmoneans and Judah and this and that. And you don't get the dirtier part of the battle, which was fought against the Hellenists that took sides with the Greeks. And it's a good thing. I think it would spoil the national religious holiday that Hanukkah is to bring up the the infighting that there was. So Chazal, I think, were wise to do that. And we should not spoil Hanukkah itself by that kind of stuff. But you need before Hanukkah, after Hanukkah, not Hanukkah, to take a sober look at what was going on. Now, this leads me to something that I wrote about this week. And that is when you look at the aftermath of the Hanukkah story, the first thing that it says in various histories is that, true, the Beit HaMikdash was cleaned up and purified and back functioning in the hands of the Jews, and there was some sort of kingdom that was restored to the Jewish people. But the battles against the Yavanim, against the Greeks, continued unabated after the Hanukkah story. Never got rid of that. And after a mere 26 years of autonomous Jewish rule, the Romans started to show their muscle and became increasingly involved in affairs in the land of Israel, which eventually led 180 years later to the destruction of the Second Temple, which we are still mourning to this day. So the pre-Hanukkah story isn't so great. The Hanukkah story itself is not so great. The post-Hanukkah story is worse, and yet, so this, I said before, you might be depressed, don't. Because I believe that as depressing as the situation sounds, the fact of the matter is, men of deep understanding, where we call them B'nei Vina, Yemei Shmona Kavu Shir Urananim, established an eight-day holiday with unabated Hallel, full Hallel. You might have thought, with all of the negative parts of the story, that they would have reduced it. They didn't. And the celebration is complete, or as complete as any celebration of ours can be, until the final redemption. The final redemption means that we will, for the first time ever, be able to say, and we lived happily ever after. But that hasn't come, and it's never been. So we still celebrate Pesach, Zman Yetziat Mitzrayim, Zman Cherutenu, the time of our freedom, when after that, we had a wandering period in the Midbar for 40 years and many things that happened during that time. And Shavuot, which is the time of the receiving of the Torah, was followed a mere 40 days later with the destruction, with the building of the golden calf and the smashing of the Luchot. And yet we celebrate Shavuot and Sukkot, etc., etc. And one of the etc. that I like to include in this is the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 with Yom HaAtzmaut. When people say, how can we celebrate the establishment and thank God for the establishment of the State of Israel when this was a problem, that's a problem, that's a problem, that's a problem, it doesn't compare to the problems of the Hasmonean dynasty in post-Hanukkah. So what we have here is a situation that we need to really, genuinely say thank you to God for many, many, many good things, even when they are mixed with negative things. We'll do more, but what I want to do now is play a track from the new album for Hanukkah by the Maccabees. This one is Al Hanisim. It is a traditional tune which the Maccabees have put their own style to. So enjoy, and then we'll talk more.
Al Hanisim ve'al ha'purkan ve'al ha'gvurot ve'al ha'tshuot ve'al ha'milchamot she'asita lavotenu bayamim ha'hem bazman hazeh bayamim ha'hem bazman hazeh.
As you probably know, Hanukkah and Purim are the two major post-biblical holidays on our calendar. In much, much more recent times, we've added Yom HaAtzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, but classical post-biblical holidays, Purim and Hanukkah. And Hanukkah, which is what we're at now, so let's talk about it a little. I'm not saying this as opposed to Purim. I'm saying this as a Hanukkah thing. The Jewish people seemed to have taken to Hanukkah in a grand way. More so than maybe anything else. Why do I say that? Main two reasons. If you ask in many, many homes, especially Ashkenazim, where everybody lights his own Chanukiah, the father, sometimes the mother also, all the children, often just the boys, but very often also the girls, and big families. You have a lot of candles going. And the question that is sometimes asked is, how come it did not develop to have one person light and everyone answering Amen? Because of Berov Am Hadrat Melech, in a multitude there is more honor to the king. And follow the lead for Kiddush and Hamotzi and many other things that we do where not everybody does it themselves, but one person does it on behalf of the community or the behalf of the household. And the answer that's given is that Chanukah developed a fanship, a chavivut, a love and a cherishing on the part of the Jewish people that is quite unusual. Another item is the fact that the original mitzvah of Chanukah candles was a single candle per home each night. That meant one candle in the household for the eighth night as well. And what evolved was marking the number of nights by one candle, then two, three, four, five, up to eight. And that practice, especially when done by everybody in the home, is considered mahadrin min hamahadrin, which means it is the highest level of going way beyond the requirement, and it's done by everybody. When you have mahadrin or mahadrin min hamahadrin practices, you could do your statistics and say 82% of Jews do it the regular way, and another 18% do it in the mahadrin way. But here we're talking about across the board. The most non-observant Jews who nonetheless light Chanukah candles will light one the first night, two the second night, three the third night, probably without even knowing that it is officially beyond the requirement of the law, because that's the way it's done, and that's the way it developed, and that's the way people took to it. It is a very, very special holiday. There is a certain irony, I don't know if a better word for it, that non-observant Jews who light Chanukah candles, whatever their motives are joining in celebrating a festival that also is considered a victory of religious Torah-observant Jews over non-religious. So that I always found ironic. But, you know, you don't have to tell too many people that. The fact of the matter is that within the practice of lighting candles, there is a range of behaviors, exactly when to start and how long they have to last, and what materials you use. I grew up with that box of 44 colored candles with a slight twist in the body. I remember fighting my brothers over the choice of colors. It's not fair. He took the red. He took the blue. You know, I wanted a blue to go with my white and alternate, and now it doesn't look even. And way, way beyond that, all of us evolved to the use of olive oil in an oil lamp. When I came to Israel 34 years ago, I started lighting. Actually, it didn't happen until Ramat Eshkol. So let's say 31 years, I've been lighting outdoors. And sometimes the weather is not compatible with that, and sometimes it's very compatible. But that is a very common thing in Jerusalem. Was not so common outside, so let me explain. The original location of the Chanukah lamps was meant to be outside your door at the entrance, specifically near the doorpost on the left side, because the mezuzah was on the right-hand doorpost. And this way, when you enter and leave the house, you are surrounded by mitzvot. Mezuzah on the one side, Hanukkah candles on the other. And this was the practice. It was done to publicize the miracle, to say to everyone passing by, hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, it's Hanukkah. And we thank God for the miracles, etc., etc. In long periods of exile, the long period of exile, in certain countries, it was not conducive weather-wise to light outdoors. It was not considered conducive neighbor-wise. People were liable to be persecuted for a public display of this mitzvah, and the lighting went indoors. When the environment permitted it, meaning the people among whom we lived, then the compromise was indoor at the windowsill so it could be visible from the street. There were times and places where it was in the house without being visible, with windows blacked out so that nobody would see from the outside. It depends on the situation of our neighbors. But when you came back to live in Israel, when one came back to live in Israel, then you had a situation where no good reason not to go back to the original practice, and people started lighting outdoors. And many people remained the way they had always lit, indoors. There happens to be another dispute as to when is the prime time to light the candles. Some people, or most people, will say light it when it gets dark. That's a time called Tzeit HaKochavim, which is a whole discussion by itself. And others who follow what's called Minhag Yerushalayim light right after sunset, when it's still significantly light outside, but already candles would be visible. And that was the Minhag of the Vilna Gaon. And lighting outdoors has retained that Pirsume Nisa, publicizing the miracle. And it doesn't mean that you're telling people something they don't know. But when you walk down the street and you see a Chanukiah, you smile, because it's a national thing. It's a worldwide Jewish thing. And that's good. Apropos Hanukkah, but of nothing else that I've said so far, I just bought a book by internet, picked it up this morning, of Curious George and Hanukkah. It's been around for a while, and it's really funny to see the man in the yellow hat take off his hat and have a kippah on his head. But it's not as weird as you would think, since H.A. Rey, who created Curious George, was Jewish. And it's just something for anyone who likes Curious George, any kids who like Curious George, or former kids. It's a cute book to have for Hanukkah. So I just thought I'd throw that in. I really hope I won't have a hard time doing a show next Thursday, because there are a lot of other Hanukkah things I'd like to share with you. Let me just review. This Shabbat, we bench Rosh Chodesh Tevet, which is 2 days this year, the 6th and 7th day of Hanukkah, the 30th of Kislev, and the 1st of Tevet. Rosh Chodesh Tevet is always during Hanukkah, but sometimes it's only 1 day, and sometimes it's 2 days, and sometimes it's during the week, and sometimes one of those days, the first one specifically, is Shabbat, as it is this year. So we will announce this Shabbat. Rosh Chodesh Tevet will be B'yom Shabbat Kodesh Ulamachrato B'yom HaRishon. It will be B'yom Rishon. It will be next Shabbos and the following day, Sunday. That means next Shabbat we have 3 Torahs, as I mentioned earlier, and we'll talk about that in Yirtzeh Hashem more on next week's show for Hanukkah. Just to review one major point that I wanted to get across, in the Sedra we have the continuing, the beginning of the continuing story of problems within the Jewish people. We have the unfinished business of enemies from outside. And both of those fronts continue all the way through Jewish history. And so does Hanukkah. Nothing yet, I emphasize that again, nothing yet has allowed us to say, and we lived happily ever after. May we be privileged to the Geula Shlema, so we will be able to say it. On that note, let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chanukah Sameach, and Lehishtameah for the Chanukah show next week.